Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
The government will never call you up and be like, you know, John, it appears that you paid taxes and you didn't have to. They will not call you up and say you overpaid. It's really on you to make sure your filing is done correctly and you provided the right information to your accountant.
Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. I just wanted to give a shout out for anyone who is interested in being a guest. It is completely anonymous, so we'll let you choose a fake name and we will hide identifiable information so you can come on the show and share freely. It is a full hour to an hour and a half with me, Barbara, and we'll do a deep dive on your finances, where you're doing well, where maybe you're struggling, and come up with a game plan for how to reach your financial goals. To be a guest, you just need to put a submission in either on Instagram or on our website, www.futurerichpodcast.com. And you just need to be a female. As we've said before, this podcast is produced with Amy, Alex, and myself. So an all-female team. And our goal is to help improve financial education amongst women. So that is why we interview women about their finances. So if you're listening to this and you're interested in being a guest, please put in a submission on our website, www.futurerichpodcast.com, or send us a message on Instagram.
Hello, and welcome to Financial Podcast Future Rich. I'm your host, Barbara Ginty, and I'm also a CFP, which is a certified financial planner. And I'm very excited to bring you another CFP today. Welcome, Charlotte.
Hey, thanks for having me, Barbara.
So Charlotte, you've been on the podcast once before, but why don't you introduce yourself and tell our listeners a little bit about yourself? We'll go from there.
Awesome. So my name is Charlotte Galetka. I am also CFP. I live in Atlanta, Georgia. I do help individuals in my private practice, and Barbara and I like to nerd out on tax law changes and Social Security and all the really boring things. When people overhear our conversations, they quickly leave. So you do not want to be with Barbara and I in a bar because we are a fun time when it comes to tax law.
Exactly. It's actually one of my favorite things as well. So I'm excited to have you on today because if you haven't already listened to it, we did an episode about the new Trump accounts and the expanded 529s, which is part of OBBBA, the new bill that is a mouthful to say, that was passed into law over July 4th weekend. And so, but there are a lot of other changes besides those two features that I thought would be fun to have Charlotte on so she could help share some of the changes because it's a pretty big bill.
Fun. Yeah, I think one of the things that you're seeing kind of in the news and you're seeing on LinkedIn and everywhere is just the quick bites, like 5 things you need to know, 10 things you need to know. And I think that as Barbara and I have discussed, kind of gotten under the hood of this, this is a huge bill. And there are a lot more than 6 or 10 items. Clearly, as any kind of tax bill, it's going to affect different people in different ways. And I think even as professionals that are dealing with this every single day, we're having to reread it, reabsorb it, apply it to different situations. So anything that you hear, you know, on the news or that you hear that I say, take the extra time to understand your situation. And you would probably agree with me, Barbara, that one of the most powerful things you can do is understand your individual tax situation.
Which I would say most people don't understand a whole lot about tax. So we will include a little tax cheat sheet with this, but understanding your tax situation and being educated about how taxes work, I think is a great foundation to success with your finances, because we pay taxes, right? And most likely you'll pay taxes for the rest of your life. And so understanding how taxes work, like the difference between the marginal and your effective rate, the fact that we have brackets, that there's different types of taxes, I think always gets people, right? There's your ordinary income tax. And then we also have your capital gains tax, and there's two different tax brackets. So understanding it, I think, is critical to succeeding in your personal finance. And there are a lot of tax implications in this bill.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that people are, you know, when you're reading something, like you're reading the child tax credit and getting excited, you have to read the fine print. If you make more than a certain amount of money, you are not going to get the child tax credit. And even the one thing that I keep hearing the most about is the SALT, increased SALT limit. But here's the thing. If we broke down how many people are actually going to get to take advantage of it, because here's the deal. Your property, you have to itemize, first of all. And when we talk about one of the things that has happened in the bill is the standard deduction has gone up. So that means more and more people are going to be taking the standard deduction, and they're not going to be itemizing items, which would include mortgage interest, which would include charitable donations and property taxes. So SALT is referring to property taxes. Okay, so if you, like, let's just start on the basics. If you look at the standard deduction, you have to itemize more than that. So I don't know, do you have the chart in front of you? If the increase, let's see.
Yeah, I can give you the increase for the standard deduction. So it's quite significant.
Okay.
And so there's always two ways to file your taxes, where you take the standard deduction or where you itemize. And then, as Charlotte's saying, some of these, specifically the SALT, is only relevant if you itemize your taxes, which I would say is not the average bear. Most people take the standard deduction.
Let's think about this. Like, so if you are married, let's just say you're a married couple, it is going to be $31,500 for this year. So that means your mortgage interest plus your property taxes plus your charitable donations have to be more than $31,000. And I think what happens is the realtor industry, I love realtors, no knock on that, but have done a good job of saying, oh, you get to deduct your mortgage interest. Well, not everyone gets to deduct that.
And I also think you have to think about where you live. So like in New York State, 100%. It's very possible that, like, we know people that have houses that are well under $1 million that are paying 20 to 30,000 just in property tax.
Which, believe it or not, City of Atlanta has caught up to you guys.
Really?
Yes. City of Atlanta had a huge boom post-pandemic, and property taxes are sky high. And so homes that are, let's call it a $1 million home in Atlanta, is going to have a $10,000 or more tax bill. And so what we talk about SALT gets thrown around there, that is state and local tax. The property tax is the most, you know, that's the one that we all recognize, right? So Barbara's example, in New York, you're paying $20,000. Let's say in Atlanta, you're paying $12,000, okay? And so what has happened before is they said, all right, you can only deduct $10,000, that's it. But now it's gone up to $40,000, so you can deduct that entire $20,000, or you can deduct the entire 12 if you're in Atlanta. But let's just say that you still have to have mortgage interest and charity above that. So in your example, let's just say that a married couple owns a $1 million home in New York.
So then we'll just say their taxes then, just property tax alone, not mortgage interest. We'll say is, like, depending if they live in upstate New York, it could be very well be $30,000 to $40,000 right there just with tax.
Okay, so upstate New York, $30,000. Let's just say they have a mortgage interest of $10,000?
Yeah, okay. We'll say $10,000. Okay. The mortgage interest is usually never as much as the taxes in New York State.
No, right. So let's just say they bought a few years ago when interest rates were low, so it's low, right? So let's say $10,000 plus $30,000. Okay, $40,000 is more than $31,000, so they can deduct. The same couple in Atlanta, they might have a $12,000 property tax bill, and let's say their mortgage interest bill, let's call it $10,000. So add that together, that's 22. They're not going to.
You always want to look and see where it makes sense. And that's where it's super important, like for instance, I also own property in Utah, and the taxes are a fraction of the taxes of what you pay in New York State, especially upstate has gone really, really high lately.
Yeah.
So it's really important to look at your own personal tax situation. But yes, don't get super excited when you read something, because the SALT tax is probably not going to be that important if you live in a lower tax state.
No, I think that's one that's kind of funny that everyone got really excited about. And it just is not going to apply to as many people as they would lead you to believe. It was just a hot button because people got so upset about high taxes. And so you have to think about, and politicians like to tout something like, hey, bad taxes, but you get to deduct it. And so it felt positive. And then on the other end of that, let's just say you're a high earner. Not everybody, because then you're capped on the back end too. So do you want to go into that a little bit?
With the SALT tax, so it's capping out. It starts to phase out. So it's actually a pretty big, the calculation's a bit confusing, but it's a pretty big tax bomb if you go over $500,000 in joint income.
Right. But if you think about it, you have to think about the couple that's making over $500,000. This is totally possible. You know, a mm-hmm. joint couple in New York, they're the ones that are going to buy the homes that are expensive enough to get the SALT deduction. So you kind of have this situation where it will be interesting for us as practitioners to see how many people actually fall into this category.
Yeah, how many people actually utilize it.
Utilize
I think
it.
The one that didn't get as much press is the increase in standard deduction and the permanence of the current brackets, which are
correct.
More generous.
Correct. And I would say if you haven't already, Google the current tax brackets and kind of see. I think one thing is that the high earners, you know, it was 39% was the top, and it's 37.5, I think, is the, let's see, what is the actual top bracket?
So that 37. Became,
yeah, 37%. So that's a huge, you know, 2% of savings is a big deal when you're making, you're having a very high income year, or you work for a company, you got some RSUs and some stock situations that bumps up your income. That's a significant difference. And the standard deduction really helps a lot of people. I would encourage everyone that's listening. I know it's painful and taxes are not fun, but when you get your taxes prepared, usually the only thing that you ask is, do I owe or do I get a refund? Take that opportunity to say, what was my marginal bracket, which is the highest, what Barbara talks about, the highest that you pay, and what is my effective tax bracket? So then you kind of understand. Another thing is, I have a lot of retiree clients who get really worked up about taxes. But then I look at their taxes and I say, oh my gosh, your effective tax rate is so low. You're paying a lot less in taxes than you actually realize. So looking under the hood, since we're talking about seniors, you want to talk about another deduction that's going to help?
Yeah, so I feel like the seniors came out strong in this bill.
Same.
They did really well. I would be thrilled to be over 65. So the way it works in our tax code is, often, as people are in aging to 65 and older, that's the number in our tax code, they usually don't itemize. Not to say all seniors, but on average, I see most seniors
same
take the standard deduction, because they get the standard deduction. They also get an over 65 deduction. And so now we just discussed the standard deduction went up. So married filing joint is now $31,500. They already got an over 65 deduction, which was $3,200 for married filing joint. And in addition to this, in this bill, if you are a married filing joint couple, you're getting an additional $12,000 for the tax years of 2025 through 2028, which is significant.
Huge. So it's significant.
It's huge. So it's bringing your overall standard deduction up to $46,700 as a married filing joint couple. Once again, phase out, as Charlotte says, the government always puts some caveats on things.
I'll tell you the limit. If you're making more than $250,000. No dice.
You'll not get the $12,000. You still get your regular standard deduction and your standard over 65, but you don't get this extra $12,000. And it begins to phase out at $150,000. So once again, the phase outs are a little more complicated than usual, but it phases out over $100,000, between $150,000 and $250,000. Interestingly enough, the over 65, you can be itemizing and take that additional $12,000 from what I've seen.
Really? I did not see that. Okay.
When these bills come out, there's always some misinformation, and it'll be interesting to see the first time that anyone will be over 65 will be able to use this additional $12,000 married filing joint will be at tax time. But as far as I've read, you don't need to be doing standard deduction. You can use that as a an itemized filer, although I would say most over 65, the average 65-year-old will be using the standard deduction. So yeah, it's huge.
I would agree. And I would also say if you feel like you or your parents or your friends over 65 are making close to $250,000 as a married couple or $150,000 as an individual, at the end of the year, take stock and see, you know, before you sell anything that triggers gains, before you, you know, if you're taking RMDs, if you're over 70, you can do a qualified charitable donation. Make sure, because this is a nice benefit, if you are close to that line, work with your professionals to make sure that you're trying to stay below that.
Yeah, absolutely. From now until 2028, there's a lot of opportunity for strategic tax planning with this additional, for over 65, the additional $12,000, because it's almost $46,700 that you don't pay tax on.
That's fantastic. Which is, yeah, you're right.
Which is amazing.
You're right.
The 65-year-olds are all amazing. They're all, most of the people over 65 thought they didn't realize they were still getting the over 65, the regular over 65 deduction, and then this right. additional one.
On top of it. And I will throw one out for the state of Georgia. We are also giving individuals over 65 an additional $65,000 of income without paying state of Georgia taxes.
Whoa, really?
Yes. Yes.
It's so a for little all my New Yorkers. Tax.
Yeah, if you want to come here and live here 6 months in one day, then yes.
That's very generous. So you don't pay on the first $65,000 of state?
It has to be retired. It has to be retirement.
Retirement.
Income. So it has
New York
to be,
is not generous. Ours is $20,000.
Mm-hmm. Mm-mm. It has to be IRA, pension. Yep. Yeah. So that
annuity.
Right. I mean, I'm seeing retirees pay so far less in taxes in the state of Georgia than they did when they were working. It's incredible. It's a great state. It's a very tax-friendly state for retirees.
Oh, 65. Wait, and is that per person? So as a household, it's more? Oh, so you basically don't have to pay any state tax if you're retired, living on retirement income.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. Okay, that's amazing. That's good to know. Yeah. We have a lot of people leaving New York State, specifically because when you go to retire, the issue is you get a credit for $20,000, which is great per person. So as a married couple, you can usually try to split that up and each take the $20,000. But after that, it's really high property tax, right? Like very, very high property tax. Like seeing somebody with $15,000, $20,000, $25,000, $30,000 in property tax is not uncommon. And they do give a deduction for people over 65 to get an exemption on property tax to try to bring it down because they're trying to keep the seniors. But oftentimes people in retirement say it's the cost is too expensive in New York, and they look at something like
Florida,
Georgia.
Yeah.
Well, Florida, because there's no state tax, but I was unaware that Georgia had such a great state break. That's amazing.
We try to compete with Florida. And then, you know, what's happened in Florida is the insurance has gone up so high because of the,
the
hurricanes and the housing has gone up high. So I think we have some people that have actually migrated to Georgia for that reason. But the joke is that Atlanta is that we are full. So look elsewhere.
Look outside of Atlanta, please.
We're crowded. We're full. We're very crowded.
That's amazing. So for people listening, if you're not familiar with taxes, you're going to pay two types of tax. You're going to pay if you fall in a state like New York or Georgia where there's tax, you're going to pay state tax. And then you also have your federal. So everything we've been discussing right now is regarding your federal, with the exception of what I said and Charlotte said, which is for New York retirees, people, you know, over 65, they get a credit of $20,000 per person where they don't have to pay on IRA or retirement distributions. And then in Georgia, it's more than triple. That's $65,000. So if anyone's looking to retire, I would look at Georgia because that's a great benefit. And as you said, the homeowners, you're right. With Florida, that's the issue, is the homeowners insurance has gone up significantly. So anyway, seniors have done really, really nicely. Anyone over 65. So if your parents are over 65, your grandparents are over 65, make sure they're aware this is a really great benefit, but this additional deduction is only through tax years 2025, so this year through 2028. And then it goes away.
Well, yeah, we can only take one bite at a time.
Yeah, that's true. We'll have no idea. We have no idea.
I tell my kids, they ask me a bunch of times, like, I'm like, we live 1 year at a time. So because, you know, all the changes with COVID and schools and everything. And so I feel that's applies to tax law, right? You know, well, we live one year at a time. There's been major tax laws in the past 5 years. If we look back, Secure Act,
what?
2.0, CARES Act after COVID. I mean, there has been kind of a whiplash of back and forth, you know, and then the Social Security Fairness Act. I talked to a client today who actually got a significant increase in Social Security. Social Security Fairness Act is a whole nother topic that we're not going to touch today, but it's an example of another change. But let's focus on this. You want to talk about charity?
Why don't you fill us in on what's going on with charitable giving?
So let's talk about charitable giving, because when Barbara and I were talking about itemizing, that's one of the three things that is included. So we're talking about mortgage interest, we talked about property taxes, state and local taxes, and then charity is also added to that. Okay, so two major things to notice. One, your charity is still available up to 60% on cash limits of your AGI, which is adjusted gross income. However, one really important thing, the first 0.5% is not deductible. Okay.
Where do you think they come up with these numbers?
I don't know, but it drives every professional that is a tax preparer or a CFP crazy, because it used to be I could ask my client, how much did you give to charity? And they would say, I gave $5,000. Great. And now I have to calculate their AGI, the 0.5%. So if your AGI is $100,000, your first $500, you cannot deduct. So if you give $5,000 to your charity of choice, we can only deduct $4,500. So I find that to be offensive to anyone who has to run a calculator. Now, I'm glad, I'm very charitably inclined, and that's important to me. And there's a lot of organizations that I support that are really important to me that I want to see thrive. So I'm glad that you can still deduct when it crazes people to do charity, but come on, the calculation. So it's important to note that that first 0.5 doesn't count. After that, it can still be another really important change on the charity is, remember how we talked about a lot of people are not going to itemize. Okay. So there is this brand new provision that allows someone who is member just taking the standard deduction. So we use the example of a married couple taking $31,500. You can take a $1,000 deduction for individuals and for married filers, even if you do not itemize. That is a big deal, because let's just say
I think that's great.
I do too. So it's like they made one thing complicated and then,
and then
the
one thing easy.
One thing easy. But, you know, I think that's one of the great things about, let's just say, people in the United States. When you look at how much we give, we're very charitably inclined. No one talks about this, but we give a significant amount.
Tremendous amount.
The tax code has helped that. And I'm talking about individuals. I'm not talking about the government writing checks. I'm talking about individual pockets opening. And so if you're someone who does a standard deduction, but you still want to support, you know, your any kind of charity, now it's really easy to have that count. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's a really good incentive to saying, hey, you know, we feel like giving back, so we can give $1,000 to our local food bank or whatever, you know, your charity of choice, and then you can get credit for it. You can get a deduction. So it gives a good incentive to help your neighbor.
I think it's great. I wish they made it like slightly higher.
I do too.
Two and four or something,
same.
You know?
But I think they had to start slow because we'd never really done that. You'd always had to itemize to do
any sort of charitable deduction other than a QCD, as you mentioned earlier.
Yeah. That didn't change. That's one thing that didn't change.
Yeah. Which is good.
It is still good. That's a whole nother pod. If you've not done a podcast on that, I would love to go there.
Okay.
That's a 65, actually a 70 plus topic.
Yeah, 70 plus topic.
No.
But yeah, no, I think that's great, but it will be more complicated and you have to do your AGI calculation. But that's always everything. The way I always feel about these bills is they give you something and then they like take something away or make something easy and then make something complicated. They never just make it all easy and straightforward.
No. When I was studying tax, you know, for the CFP, one of the things I'll never forget my instructor said is it is a balance sheet. So the IRS, like, those are ways to think of it. Like, if you're getting income, you're paying. Like, everything has to be balanced. And so I always think of that as a balance scale, like those little, you know, scales when you see the judge kind of things.
Yeah, where it balances out.
Yeah. But I would say any way, shape or form, if you're giving $1,000 to charity, you're getting credit. So as you're thinking about, you know, giving money to charities in need, just kind of keep that in mind that there is a place for you.
And make sure you track it, because you have to tell, if you're going to file your taxes, you have to say that you gave to charity so that you can take that deduction.
It's a great point. Save your receipt,
save your receipt.
And it has to be a 501c, which is a qualified charity. Most churches, most food bank, you know, Red Cross, like large organizations, but
they'll give you a receipt, but you have to make sure you submit it to get the credit. So that's important. If you're listening to this and saying like, I've always wanted to, this is the first year I feel like I have the bandwidth in my budget to donate, single, you get 1,000 if you're doing standard deduction, and then married filing joint, you get 2,000. just want to have your receipts and make sure you give it to your accountant.
And also, you don't have to do the whole 1,000. So if you feel like,
yeah, that's true,
you know, a goal for you is to give $500 to charity, it counts. Again, you get to take a deduction for that. So I would say, you know, most charities would agree no amount's too small. They need help, especially a lot of funding has been cut of late. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of organizations that need us to step up.
Yes, I think that was I like the one with the adding it to the.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
The standard deduction, I think that makes it real easy for everybody.
Yeah, we like easy. We're cheering for the easy. But the other one, just remember, you're going to have to calculate the higher. And here's another tough thing that I don't like. Because it's percentage-based, the higher of your income, the higher the bar is that you have to jump. Because,
right.
But, yeah. Not fair.
Okay.
That's okay.
Okay, so we mentioned, this is also a pretty high bar, but, you know, I have talked about on the podcast, I'm a big believer that estate planning is really important and that, you know, the first thing you can do from your estate plan standpoint is set up a beneficiary on your retirement account, right? So we've kind of talked, you know, worked our way into estate planning. I've had some estate planning attorneys on, but these are for higher income earners, but they did increase the estate tax exemption permanently. It was set to sunset. That was originally from the, I'm going to butcher the Tax Jobs Cuts yep. and Act of 2017. Mm-hmm. So they increased it to 15 million as a single filer, 30 million as a joint, which is quite high. But once again, remember, we always have state and federal. So that's your federal limit, which does not mean that you won't have an estate tax problem in the state, because a lot of states are not going to be at parity with what was just passed. Like, for instance, New York State is not nearly as high. So just because you don't owe, or your parents or your grandparents don't owe federally, doesn't mean they won't owe statewide. And you see this a lot in the news where, like, on say movie stars or musicians did not put together an estate plan, and you'll read about it. And then basically who ends up getting the money, or a lot of the money, are the lawyers who battle it out because there was no plan in place.
Agreed. And also, you know, you have to keep in mind, I'm with you 100% on estate planning, number one important thing you can do. And you think $15 million is a lot, but we all know those examples of, like, the grandma that bought the home on the coast for $100,000 and now it's worth $10 million.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking. Like, I know I met a girl and her parents bought really, 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 really early in Aspen, Colorado, like before anybody was there. And I think just the home, like, will set mm-hmm. them over the edge.
Right.
Like, the property value.
Because property values have gone up so much, and that counts towards that $15 million. A lot of people, yes. you know, think, oh, it's $15 million in the bank. No, it's $15 million of everything you own. Assets. So
assets.
Real estate, money,
right,
everything. But yeah, that's a positive. I think that's really great because, let's be honest, dying is, you know, hard enough for that. You don't want to pay the government taxes because your
loved
one is
dying. You
don't
want the government to take like 40% of, if you were going to inherit money, you don't want to give 40% up.
No.
So, and that's also business interests, remember. So if you have a grandparent or a parent that has a business and the valuation of the business, that also could trigger, depending on how things are structured, right? Estate planning can save and prevent
Correct.
An estate tax problem, but no planning is very problematic. So the way I always tell people, because my sister's an attorney, so I feel like I can get away with this. Attorneys are expensive. They are a lot cheaper if you pay them up front. They are a lot more expensive if you pay them after the fact.
I like that. The other thing, this is going to make me sound, you know, total mom thing, but what is it? It's like failing to plan is planning to fail.
Yeah. It's true.
I have a high schooler, so, you know, we have to say those kind of things a lot. So let's talk about business, though, because another thing
yes.
I haven't, you know, and we're just going to broad brush on the business topic because there's just a lot. And I know that probably a lot of listeners don't want to get into the weeds of business. However, I think that the bonus depreciation in Section 179 is important. What that means in English is, have you ever noticed your friend that has said, oh, my business paid for my car? And the reason why is because the business owner can write off 100% of the car if it's used for business expenses, which is a big deal.
As long as it meets the weight requirement.
Right. 6 tons.
Has to be.
Right.
Yes.
You walk into any car dealership in this country and you're going to say, I need to buy a car that qualifies for the business deduction. They are
usually
going to be
in
able
November.
To help you. Now, like I said, we are not offering tax advice, but I have seen people get creative. People that own rental properties have a business. They're using that to buy a car because they have to go to their property and do, you know, Barbara and I have both owned properties. We go there more than we want to and do projects. I would prefer not to go there all the time and do
Wait,
projects.
Wait, you know, Charlotte, I have to tell you, I did a poll on Instagram and 80% of the people were like, oh yeah, owning real estate is passive. And two were like, 80% said it was not passive. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. And then two people, which is fine, is like, good for you, were like, oh, it's completely passive for me. And I was like, how, like, what am I doing wrong? I'm always doing work.
I think my best tweet ever was, the only one who thinks owning rental property is passive income are the people that have never owned rental property.
Yes, I agree. Unless you just have like, some people get lucky. They buy the property brand new, no problems, and sell it 5 years later, no problem. Like,
that's rare.
But
now, granted, I did have a rental property that for about 6 years was problem free. But you can't, if you've done it for any amount of time, it's going to become, you're going to have an active involvement in it. Period. End of story.
Yeah.
But you can write off things now. You can take a whole deduction. So if you need to buy, and there's a lot of ifs, ands, or buts here. So this is one of those things.
You have to have a good accountant.
Yeah, you have to understand what a bonus depreciation is. But it's a huge, if your business, let's just say you own a landscaping business and you're having,
say that.
Oh yeah, I have seen some in my practice. And let's just say you're having a really successful year and it's about November. Okay. And you need a new truck. What are we going to tell you to do? Go buy the truck so you can write it off. Now, granted, there's a business need for it. And obviously the IRS is
used
giving,
in the business.
Yeah, is giving incentive. This is why a tax code incentivizes people to do certain things. So going to buy a vehicle helps the economy, but it's going to help that individual who's a small business owner that really needs to take 100% off of that car, truck, whatever.
That money could then be used to hire someone to drive that truck to expand the business.
Correct.
But yeah, that was one that had been on the chopping block for a while. And a lot of business owners were excited to see that that was in this incredibly long bill.
Yes. And there's some other, you know, I would say opportunity zones were touched there, rural opportunity zones, international tax. Those are things that, I mean, 0.01% of people might need, not everybody else. So we're not going to talk about it, but they're in there because this is a big bill. Don't be fooled.
It's huge. And we'll continue to see more stuff coming out. What I always tell people is what happens is it gets passed. It generally gets passed in a very inconvenient time.
Always.
From a social standpoint. So it's either like between Christmas and New Year's
or
July 4th.
Right.
Who is reading on the weekend?
I have
before?
Spent like most Christmas Eve writing a blog post on Secure Act, the first one. But you know what? I realized my next post, next time, because then we had COVID, then the CARES Act, then Secure Act 2.0. So this bill came out and said, you know what? I'm going to wait 2 months to write my blog post. And I did. And guess what? I was able to think through the information better.
And there's more information that comes out, because usually what happens is the bill comes out and then there are a lot of clarifying questions, right? Mm-hmm. That we're waiting on clarification on various aspects of the bill. Like, can this still be used if you're not using a standard deduction? Like, is it eligible on your itemized? So we do wait a little bit after the bills, because what happens is usually lawyers, other lawyers, not the politicians, will, because often politicians are lawyers, not always, but often.
Often, ironically.
Ironically, which is why everything's so complicated. Other lawyers will read it and then we'll get like talking points or like how you implement, because implementing something is very different than how they structured it. You know, we have to know like, what are the steps? What are the forms we need? How do we file everything? Because that's not in any of the bills. So like, I'll give you an example, like the Trump account. How do we open that account?
No one knows.
Nobody knows.
It's all concept. I mean, I always tell people too, you know, Congress sets the bill, the IRS implements it. And people also have to realize too, like financial institutions actually do the tactical side of it. So when we talk about like a QCD, which is a qualified charitable donation, I always have to tell people it is permittable by tax law, but your custodian, meaning whoever holds the money, whether that be Fidelity or T. Rowe Price or LPL or whatever, whoever custodian, you know, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, they have to make the money, the tactical side, get to the charity, right? Just because Congress said it, all these businesses have to find a way to make it happen. And
right, so we have to know what form they require, right, what minimum they have, because they, you know, they won't let you do it for a dollar. It's not worth the paperwork, right? So they have, like, that maybe they only do it annually. Some people want to do it quarterly. So the actual implementation, yeah, is always a little different.
Yeah, so yeah, Congress thinks of it and then everybody else has to implement.
Figure it out. Right.
And, you know, you've got the IRS, right? So the IRS has to issue rulings on how it's going to be implemented, right? And then the financial custodians are the ones that have to tactically get the money to you
and create the forms.
Correct. Create the forms, create the processes. And so you always have to kind of think about the chain of how these events are happening, you know?
And that's why it takes so long, because we get like, okay, here's the theory. Like, this is what they want to happen. Then the IRS usually comes out with some more clarification around it. And then the firms have to come out with the exact operation and process. So it is an endeavor. And then by the time we finally get it like all squared away, they're like, okay, we have a new bill.
It changes. If there's anything about tax law and financial like implementation over the past 5 years, it changes. Like if I got a tattoo.
It's the only constant. Yeah.
Maybe I'll get a tattoo that says it changes.
So, okay. Yes. I like the one on. So if you're a business owner, you want to check out the bonus depreciation on the section 179. That's where it is in the Internal Revenue Code. So that's like, correct, if you want to
Look at that. And yeah. I would say that's the end of the year thing. And also, yes, you know, as we approach the end of the year, a lot of these things that are now available, you want to apply your situation. And the reason we're saying the end of the year is because you're going to have a better idea of what your income projection, exactly, is going to be. And also going back to the charitable donations, if you had a really strong year this year and you're charitably inclined, this might be a better year to do it. Talk to your,
yep,
because this year it is allowing you to take, you don't have to do the funky calculation, you know, it's just everything. If you're going to do a donor advised fund, if you're somebody who had a huge like company sale or a huge event causing you to have a big income at the end of the year, talk to your accountant and financial professionals about doing a charitable giving this year versus next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially the seniors who, if you're trying to stay below that income threshold.
Oh, yeah. We really, Barbara and I are really interested in everyone over 65 staying below. Yeah, if you're over 65,
this is your moment. Like these next 4 years, this is your moment to shine.
I can't wait till I'm 65. I get a huge deduction. I'll have some freedom. I'll be traveling.
I'm going to have to move to
Georgia. Okay.
I'm gonna tell people because I definitely have people that are like, I don't know what state to move to, and I want to look to a state that's like tax friendly.
Yeah, just not Atlanta. Let's talk about
one more. Not Atlanta. I won't send anyone to Atlanta. Don't worry. So let's talk about one more thing that I think is really interesting, and I'm very curious, as we just said about Congress versus IRS versus implementation, because this is going to be on the payroll companies, and I hope it's not. I think it's going to be a little messy. The no tax on tips.
Yeah.
How is payroll going to do this?
That is a great
question.
I don't
think payroll is usually like a strong performer. Like I've never like worked with a payroll company where I'm like, man, you're an all-star. You've got this figured out.
Did you just say payroll is not a strong performer?
Yes. The payroll companies, I don't think are strong performers. All right. Well, I'll be honest and tell everybody about my experience. I have had them overpay employees, underpay employees, contribute to the wrong retirement accounts. I have seen it all with payroll. And I'm always just like, what is going on over there? I'm paying y'all to do paychecks. And I don't do that many paychecks. I have friends that have way bigger businesses that are paying, I don't know, 100, 150 employees. I'm paying like 2 to 4 at max. And we are putting money in wrong accounts. Like what's happening over there? So anyway, that all I thought when they said this is like, man, these payroll companies are going to have their hands full.
Well, you would
this.
Hope that, like, you know how every time you go to a restaurant and it's got the turn, the quick serve, and they want you to tip, you know, automatically. Yeah. One would hope that this software is somehow connecting that tip portion to the different people. I mean, I think cash tips
are
easy.
But what about overtime is W-2?
Yeah, overtime is going to be tricky. But I would say tips, the cash tip situation, that's on the individual workforce.
Yeah, you know, that's your right. That'll be through, like, the POS system. But yeah, so it's no tax on tips or overtime.
Well, no, is a some overtime. Let's see. Temporary allowance deduction is up to $25,000 and only $12,500 of overtime.
Yes. And my also, we have the phase outs again.
Yep, phase outs. But my very first job was a claims adjuster at a large insurance company. And when there was a big storm, you had to work overtime. And so I kind of think about what, you know, looking back on the paycheck, it did tell you what was overtime and what wasn't. So one would hope that the overtime would be, and that was, that's a very hard job. So anyone who's a claims adjuster, if you're listening, you know, solidarity for you. We need you. You're incredible. You can do anything after you do that job.
I hope I'm wrong. I just, my personal experience with payroll is, as I said, not strong performance that I've seen. Now, well, this is like,
be aware of it. If you are someone who gets overtime, don't count on payroll and don't count on, you need to know that yourself. That's what I would do.
Yeah. So my husband is someone who gets overtime. So we will have to look at these phase outs and
you send in the corrections to the payroll department. I bet you do.
I said to him, I was like, you're going to have to track your overtime now because like you want to double check the work because you don't want to be paying tax on something that you don't technically have to pay tax on because the numbers got mixed up because his overtime is not guaranteed. He's not like jobs are guaranteed overtime. Like every week you're going to do 40 regular time, you know, overtime. His is clock in, clock out. So sometimes overtime, sometimes not, which I do think is a lot of, he's a union member, union jobs. So it'll be curious to see, but my advice to him was you should track your own hours to make sure that we have the right numbers for the end of the year.
100%. And I would say, yeah, bottom line is be your own advocate, be responsible. And I also wonder, do the employers not have to pay taxes on that too?
Because I don't know that.
That's another implementation question, because if I was an employer and I had to pay overtime, you know, you have to pay bigger dollars. So it would be a nice benefit not to have to pay, employment taxes and all that kind of stuff on that.
Yeah, the FICA taxes.
Yeah, that would be great. Who knows? But I don't... luckily, knock on wood, in my profession, no one works overtime for me. So, yes.
Yeah. Ours is just, as a business owner, it's all the time. There is no
It's
overtime.
All the time. Yeah, there all is the no. Time. All time is overtime. You know, you work all hours, so you don't get overtime.
You work all the time when you own a business.
You do.
But once again, these are phased out as well. And so almost everything that we've talked about today has phase out. So you just want to see where your income, how you file, like are you filing single, married filing joint, head of household. Those are your three main brackets. And then depending on those, what are the phase outs? Because the phase outs are different for single, married filing joint, and then head of household. So you want to check to see where you fall to see if you're eligible. And remember, the phase out, the way it works is the beginning of it, you start to lose some of the benefit. And at the top number, you lose all of it and you get some of it in the middle. And there's a calculation for how to calculate that, which we won't bore you with that today.
No, but also let's talk about that in terms of the child credit. So the child credit went up. It was 2000, it goes to 2200. But here's an important thing. Let's just say that you're a single mom. That means you're head of household, okay? As long as you're able to claim that child. So you better check on your taxes that you are filing head of household and not single. This is something
big difference,
huge difference. And if you are going through a divorce or already divorced, make sure that you, if you have a child, you want to claim head of household. Ideally, I would like each party in a divorce. Let's say there's two kids. Let each one claim it. Each one of you get the deduction, unless you just like paying taxes for more taxes for fun. But if you're the primary parent, you need to be doing that. And then you need to be head of household. That's a really important distinction. Now, the question I have is I'm seeing more and more people care for like parents or like other people are living in their home. If some of my older clients are living multi-generational, yeah, I wouldn't classify those people as head of household. I'm not a CPA, so you need to ask your CPA. But if someone is living under your roof and you're not filing married, you should be filing as head of household. You should be at least asking your person, your H&R Block, your online, your TurboTax, whatever. Ask those people.
And most often we're not tax professionals. And there's a good reason that I'm not a tax professional. Same. I will never be a tax professional. You could also, the other one is married filing separate, which doesn't come in that often. You could always have your tax professional run it both ways and see what's in your best interest. That's a very valid request of a tax professional to say, should we do head of household or single? Almost always head of household will probably be better, but you can ask them to run both for you and you choose whatever is in your best interest or married filing separate versus married filing joint. Usually married filing joint's better, but once again, the reason you have a tax professional is so that you can ask these questions and they can run both scenarios for you.
Yeah. And what I would say, same thing, I'm not a tax preparer. However, what Barbara and I do is we become more knowledgeable about taxes to ourselves. We try to educate our friends. We try to educate our clients. So we help what I call it tax planning. So what I'm doing is trying to arm you with the questions that you then need to go ask your professional. Because the truth is, so many things in life, you have to be your own advocate. You have to know the questions to ask. Even with ChatGPT, if you don't put in the right question, you're not going to get the right answer, you know?
That is true. That is true.
And also be really careful on that for tax advice, by the way. Go see your professional. I'm seeing some mistakes in that area.
Oh, really? The robot's not perfect? Yeah.
No, the robot was not perfect.
But yeah, so I definitely would not take financial or tax advice from a robot. You should definitely check it with a professional. As we said, these laws change all the time and the theory and implementation are very different. And so if the robot's just reading the bill, the implementation might be very different and your situation, obviously.
And the robot's reading the wrong bill sometimes, I've noticed.
Yeah, right. Because there's a lot of new bills. You know, I will say that getting online, the new increased standard deduction, like what the married filing joint over 65, the total amount is not easy to find online. Like if you Google, what is the new standard deduction? It gives you the old amount for 60. It doesn't give you the 46,700. Just want to make a small little correction. So no tax on tips is the deduction is capped at 25,000 with a phase out of modified adjusted gross. So not AGI, but modified adjusted gross income for levels above 150 for single filers and 300,000 for married filing joint. And then the tax, no tax on overtime. Deduction is capped at 12,500 for single, but 25,000 for married filing joint with phases out at levels above 150,000 and then 300,000 for married filing joint.
That's pretty good. Okay. That's better than I thought.
Really good. Yeah. So all those with overtime or tips, not tax, something to be very mindful this year of keeping track of everything and making sure you're not paying tax where you don't have to. Because this is what I will say about taxes. The government will never call you up and be like, you know, John, it appears that you paid taxes and you didn't have to. They will not call you up and say you overpaid. It's really on you to make sure your filing is done correctly and you provided the right information to your accountant. And as Charlotte said, advocate for yourself because it is, even if they screwed it up and you do an amended tax return, they owe you money. It is very hard and takes a long time to get that check.
Yeah. And if you can walk into it, just think to yourself, if you're asking how much do I owe or how much do I get refund, you need to be asking better questions.
Yes, I agree.
Ask better questions. Maybe we should do that around tax time. What are some good questions to ask your tax preparer?
Yeah, definitely. Well, this was like a great overview. So if you listened, if you made it through this whole podcast, thank you. You should already understand more than the average person about taxes. You now know that we have brackets that have been permanently put in place with this bill. We have an increase in standard deduction. You know there's a difference between your how you file. So single, married filing joint, head of household are the most common. Often there are times where you could do married filing separate if you have student loans, something like that. We talked about the difference between your marginal, which is your highest tax bracket, your versus your effective, which is your average tax rate. And then some differences between taking the standard deduction or itemizing and things that you can use to itemize and those things that have changed with this bill. We covered a lot today. I feel like this was like a good education.
Tax changes and overall tax structure. Everyone else had fun talking about, Barbara and I are jazzed. Let's talk about taxes. It's so fun.
It's great. Well, Charlotte, I appreciate you coming on to chat through the bill with me. This is
always a pleasure. I love how you're educating everybody about everything financial. So all her listeners, keep listening. Barbara's super smart and super fun, and she is the best out there. So keep listening and you will be future rich.
Thank you, Charlotte. And we'll link to your website so everyone can.
Yeah.
Can find
actually,
you
there
well.
Is a blog post that talked about some of these things. And you can link to my blog. That'd be great.
Okay. So for all of our lovely listeners, you can follow along for our most up-to-date information on Instagram, and that is Future Rich Podcast. Time for our disclaimer. The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. All performance references are historical and do not guarantee future results. Make sure that you consult with your own legal, tax, and/or financial advisor before making any decisions.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.